All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's an FBI Friday on The Usual Suspects, and I'm happy to report Barry's here, I'm here. Dell is here, and we are going to take you for the next 3 hours talking about the NFL draft last night, all the different storylines coming out of there, and a whole lot more, including F for Funny out on FEF Friday, which means our comedian of the week, as Barry has selected another fine member of the comedic community. Fellas, what's going on?
What's up, Playboy? How are you?
All good, man. You?
Are you? Are you good though, Joel? I couldn't wait for this show. Are you?
Boy,
are you
tell
really
you what,
good?
We can't even get 30 seconds in, and we're gonna go right to the jugular.
I'm just like I'm immediately though. I was like, I'm not gonna bother him. I imagine there's a lot of he's in a glass case of emotion right now.
I'm trying to be like the Packers pick.
That was the surprise of the draft so far, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to be objective. I'm trying to not have – but, you know, to move up is also painful because I looked at everybody else going, unless they thought someone was going to try and sneak in there, you'd have been just fine at 30 and no one else was touching Jordan Love. But the fact that you moved up and everybody knows plain as day there were a ton of receivers left even at that time and you could get a good one. And you took the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers, and you're going to piss him off, and it's not a resource. I've said this forever and a day. Like, the window is only open so long for Aaron Rodgers, and we know it's now starting to close. And even though they made the NFC Championship game a year ago, there were glaring weaknesses, and they were repairable. You were able to fix those where you could still be relevant. But the fact that you just started planning for the future – instead of giving him, while that window is still open, the best chance to win, just pisses me off.
I think so. My first thought was, well, this is a message. This is LaFleur sending Aaron Rodgers a message that, look, you may think you can get on the field and do what you want and ignore my decisions and, you know, wave me off and call your own plays and do all those things. And yeah, you can do that right now. But I tell you what, you're Brett Favre now. And this kid is Aaron Rodgers. So good luck because you're on the clock.
Here's the thing. He's lived it because, like you said, 15 years ago, this was him being drafted behind Favre. Now the question is he going to be like Favre, who was a complete a-hole to Aaron Rodgers the whole time that they were together?
Well, we talked about that last night when we were live streaming. I was like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Aaron Rodgers handles this because he talked about the fact that Favre was not – nice. Favre didn't help. Favre wasn't like a complete a-hole, you know, 1,000%, but he also didn't go out of his way to be accommodating or helpful or any of those things. So is Aaron Rodgers going to be? Are you going to groom Love for your position like you expected Brett Favre to do? That's going to be interesting. And again, I think that's why LaFleur did it because he was like, okay, checkmate.
See, I don't think LaFleur did it. I think Gutekunst did it. I think that the general manager.
LaFleur was in on it, bro.
I don't think that he wasn't. I think that they, you know, they both had equal say. But I think that also the players' reaction last night was interesting because most players said this is going to light a fire under Aaron's ass. He's going to come out and he's going to prove, because he had made a statement about 6 months ago that, you know, basically they could do whatever they want. And if they want to get another quarterback in here for the future, that's fine. But he ain't taking my job for the next couple of years. Or I think he said for the foreseeable future. So, you know, you're our numbers guy, and you've pointed out his numbers haven't been what they used to be over the last couple of years. Maybe this does light a fire under his ass. But the thing that kept coming to me was he just had the blueprint laid out for him to be exactly what Tom Brady was. To be able to say, I played my whole career of my best years with one organization, but at a certain time, you mess with me, and I can mess with you and do what I want to do too. And I think that it's coming. I hate to say it, but I think it's coming. I think maybe it's 2 years, 3 years down the line, but I think Aaron Rodgers goes, you know what? I still got a couple years in the tank. You drafted this kid a few years ago. You think he's ready. I'll do what I want to do and go where I want to go and play where I want to play, because he's got 3 years, I think, where the team can still control him. And then you see what happens. And the other thing is that you look at it the way it happened with New England and the way it happened with Tom Brady from that regard, too, is they had Garoppolo for a lot of years. And whether the organization finally goes, well, Tom's pushing us and he's still got a lot left, we'll trade Jimmy. Maybe the Packers go, you know what, we're gonna groom this kid, but if Aaron keeps playing at a certain level, we still have a tradable option that people are going to want. I don't know.
Well, but the problem is when you have backups that don't play, unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, and a la Brady did in New England, and then what's his name came in, and for 1 year looked pretty damn good and ended going to KC.
Matt Castle.
Yeah, and ended up and so unless that happens, it's really difficult to get the value back for a first round pick. Remember, you moved up. So
sure.
You gave up more assets. You're never going to get that back unless you trade Aaron Rodgers and that becomes your and he becomes your starter for the future.
I mean, and look at it. They've already done. They brought in DeShone Kizer in the trade with Cleveland, and he's been nothing. Before that, you know my all-time favorite, Brett Hundley, who was drafted to be the heir apparent, and he was completely garbage. So, you know, they haven't exactly had the New England Midas touch in backups, even if they failed elsewhere otherwise. So I didn't like it. I thought they were in an A1 position to upgrade where they really needed to upgrade. You know, I think it's been 15 years since they spent a first-round pick on an offensive player, and it would have been nice because whether you went tight end or wide receiver, there were guys there to be had. Now, they could come back quickly tonight and get one or more of those players in the next two rounds and then say, no, we already had that covered too. But more so, I think watch the Texans with Kenny Stills, because if they're going to only want a sixth or a seventh and just the cap relief, Green Bay will be in on that. They have multiple sixths and multiple sevenths, and maybe their other way to kind of soothe the waters is to say, we'll go get you one more veteran receiver instead.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there was talks yesterday right before the draft started that Bill O'Brien was looking to get into the first round.
Yep.
And I felt like that was one of three things. I said that was either him just trying to show, because, you know, they've been on this world tour of Houston on the phones apologizing profusely in so many different ways to the Texans fans. Stick with us. Let's let it play out. We appreciate you doing press conferences that they've never done in the past. So you know that they know they screwed up and pissed off a bunch of fans. So I think the attempt or the rumor being floated that Bill O'Brien wanted to move up into the first round, if it were true, I think that was a way to say sorry to the fans. Either that
or cover his ass.
It was never a thing, and it was a spin. It was a half-hearted attempt at, hey, we'll trade you Kenny Stills for a first-round pick. No? Okay. Well, we tried to move up to the first round, gang. So it was that, or it was just Bill O'Brien trying to get some shine on TV and get some notoriety, because all the press right now has been bad. I don't know which one.
Well, remember
it was,
now,
but
when
I didn't
we made our bold
it.
Predictions, I boldly – that was one of mine was the Texans are going to try and trade up to the first round. But – I said wholeheartedly, the only reason he does that is because he hates to be criticized. And that would have been his way to kind of say it one more time. Hey, F you people for coming at me. I had this planned all along. But in order to get a first-round pick, as we've seen, you have to have something you're giving up to get it. I don't know what they have to give up, especially when one of the top three receivers in football wasn't worthy of getting a first-round pick in return. What the hell do they have besides Deshaun Watson that would have given you a first-round pick?
Yeah, I mean, outside of trading J.J. Watt, which you might have gotten a first-round pick.
Or Deshaun.
Yeah, or Deshaun. That's really about it. So one interesting thing, though, just to circle back real quick on the Green Bay thing, because as we were talking, it made me think, you know, Green Bay might be in the position to actually, if they wanted to, in the next year or so, or see how he plays. But I jokingly said they would have to they could trade Aaron Rodgers. There are a few teams that would do that.
They would.
You know what I mean? And if you think about it, how angry would you be, Joel, if Bill Belichick made a trade to bring in Aaron Rodgers to replace Tom Brady.
Or Jerry Jones, Barry.
Yeah.
What if Jerry Jones, especially with the Dak situation? Look, I would be you abandoning the Texans for the Chiefs. I would be abandoning Green Bay and finding a new team if I knew that. Look, when Brian Gutekunst came in as the GM, I said the one thing that they're going to do is they're going to escape Ted Thompson, who thought he was smarter than everybody in the room, and he could draft. He never went into free agency because he felt he was better at drafting than anybody was in free agency and make his team better. And that's what I thought was hurting Rodgers with the window closing. Now the window is closing. He did a good job last year improving the defense, and in 1 year really made everybody think, okay, now we got the right guy. And now in one move, he's made everybody back home go, wait a minute, are you just another version of Ted Thompson? Because this is not what we had planned.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, man. But I really, my first thought was, Aaron Rodgers just got a message. There's no other way of looking at it. This was a
direct message. I hate it,
message.
And I want to say you're wrong, but I can't.
Yeah.
And a lot of people came at me, Barry, and here's the thing. You don't know Aaron Rodgers, right? So don't say he's an a-hole. Don't say all these things. But you can say what you see, which is at press conferences, he can get a little short. He can get a little testy. But you know damn well that this is going to ruffle his feathers. And you know that things like this can get to him. He can treat it one of two ways. He can come at it with, okay, I'm going to show them and back up exactly what I said. Go ahead and draft whoever you want to draft. They ain't getting my job for a couple years. Or he can just start the whole pout and swan song thing and woe is me while he decides where he's going to go next, because he's only got a couple years left on his contract. So we'll see how he handles it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is it. It's going to be interesting because it's so funny how life and karma and everything works, because everything that he went through as a rookie being drafted,
full circle,
he's about
right?
to go through again. And I'm telling you right now, this isn't just a message in as much as it's like, well, we're just going to, you know, we've drafted a quarterback. No, they didn't wait until the third round or, you know, move up into the
right.
end of the second round. They moved up into the first round and got a quarterback. That is a significant message to send to somebody.
And here's the other thing. If you're going to move up into the first round, I think it has to be a guy that you are just sold on that has mm-hmm. every characteristic that you need in a quarterback. Jordan Love's not an accurate passer. And that's the toughest thing to get better at. It's like telling a guy when you draft him in the NBA that you're going to be a marksman, three-point shooter, and outside shooter. Some guys have it, some guys don't. And Lance will be the first to tell you, from the quarterback position, at a certain age, it's like Dwight Howard with his offense. At a certain age, if you haven't gotten it by now, you're probably not going to get much better. So that worries me, because you're going from a guy that was pinpoint accurate, and still is to some degree, and taking in a guy that you're going to have to mold and you're hoping becomes an accurate passer as he gets acclimated to the league. I don't like it. I don't like anything about it.
Well, here's the thing. So you look at it, and I was looking at – now I'm going to say all day today, but I'm referencing numbers and draft spots and positional slots and all that. But I'm using just NFL.com because I think a lot of that is driven by Lance and what he's done. And rather than just crediting Lance, I'm just going to use that as my source, my point of reference for this, right? But it's interesting when you look at, I mean, QB grades, Burrow graded out at a 707 on NFL.com, Tua graded out at a 677. But then the next three, Herbert, Love, and Eason, 0.20 points in grade between the three of them. Herbert at a 6.45, Love at 636, and then Eason at 625. What that tells me is it was kind of a stretch to move up, even to 26, and grab Love, even if he gets taken. Grade-wise, you know, and you got to look at skill set and everything else, but if you're just looking from a pure just slots and drafts and grades numbers perspective, is there a ton of difference between Love and Eason at that point? It's not like it's from Burrow to Eason. That's a significant drop-off in talent and grade and everything else, but was it worth it to move up to get a guy that you maybe could have gotten in the second round anyways?
And I was having this conversation with several people online last night. Organizations, and obviously the Giants are one of these organizations, where if they're enamored with someone, that guy might be third in terms of how Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay and Daniel Jeremiah and Lance Zierlein have a certain position group ranked. Uh-huh. But if you're enamored with him and you think he's the best or has the potential to be the best at their at a position, then you go get him no matter what. And, you know, then you just let it play out. And you have that's where you pull the Bill O'Brien and say, just see how it goes. Kind of like with Howard last year, with Titus Howard. A lot of people critical. A lot of people said there was someone better in Dillard that they should have taken. But it turned out, at least for a year, like they got it right. But with that said, unless you're just sold that we're missing something that they see and Jordan Love is that guy, unless he was one of the top three that were really like slam dunks, I hear your point and I take it a step further. If that's your guy but he goes, oh well, now just go get the best receiver on the board with your original draft position. Nothing hurt, possibly still something gained. And now you don't have all this controversy around your best player.
Because where were they going to be 30. Drafting?
30.
So they were going to be at 30. And no right. receiver was taken.
Right.
Or quarterback was taken.
Exactly. And now, there were rumors that both New England and Indianapolis would have moved up knowing that Love was sliding. I don't know that I believe that. I don't know that they were enamored, like I said, enough with his skill set to say that was our guy. It's the same way with the Niners and the Buccaneers. Buccaneers had 14, Niners had 13, but yet the Buccaneers were so worried someone was going to take the offensive tackle that they wanted that they gave the Niners a fourth to just flip-flop. Unless you know some teams talking to the Niners and you know the Niners don't need what you need, why would you do that?
Yeah, because you look, I mean, you moved up from, what, 30 to, what did we say, 20?
26.
Yeah, you moved up 30 to 26, and then right after those picks, Seattle wasn't taking a quarterback. Baltimore wasn't. I mean, no teams were taking a quarterback. Could they have moved up? Yes, but then that brings me back to my original point. So somebody moves up and grabs Love. Are you that? Is Eason that much worse to you that it wouldn't be like, well, we'll just wait now until the at the end of the second round? I mean, or then move up in the second round if you needed to?
Yeah.
It's going to cost you less to move up to the top of the second round to take Eason than it did to move up to take Love. But I guess you have to be convinced that Love is that much better.
And that he's your guy. Because otherwise, the same kind of fringy first-round picks are going to be their quarterback next year, too. So then why even deal with it at that point?
It's kind of like I was giving Dell a hard time about the Dolphins, saying they should have drafted a running back. And he was like, but they're all available. And it's a great
point.
If they're still available on day two and you can get them, I still don't think some of the picks that they made some sense. But if he's got a great point. If they're still there, then, you can still go get those guys.
We were exact opposite. I told Dell I thought the Dolphins did well. And because of the one running back that was taken, he wasn't one of the top three running backs on the board. And Kuiper Jr. said he expects six running backs to go in the second round. I think Tampa and Miami will get their running back in round two. And I think everything Miami did made them a hell of a lot better. So,
okay. I've got numbers to prove otherwise, but you might be right. I'm sure Dell will argue
with me. That's why we're here. I want Dell to actually get into this. That's great. Because it looks like Dell can also tell us about the fact that one of his ex-players is now a new member of the Houston Texans. We'll tell you about that as well as we go forward. On a Friday on the Usual Suspects, and Barry, you've got a comedian to talk about too, so we'll play a clip, tell you about him on the flip side. Don't go anywhere, right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Some days I feel like the only thing keeping me from a cabin in the woods and a bunch of dry goods and weapons and a half-written manifesto is the appropriate funds. Just ready to kickstart things. I just don't like people I don't know spending my money in ways I don't know about or approve of. Like here's an interesting thought I had with taxes recently. You pay your taxes. Where's my receipt? I feel like I should get an itemized receipt. Right? You should know exactly where your money goes. Like 7-Eleven will give you an itemized receipt for, pepperoni sticks and sugar-free Red Bull. the most inconsequential purchase. But you give the government, no matter how much money you give them, they're just like, thanks. Except minus the thanks. They just take it. I think they don't want to give us a receipt, especially like an itemized one, because if we knew where the money was going, maybe there'd be a revolution. People would be so outraged. Like, I looked up some stuff. Yeah, like for easy math, let's say you give 10 grand. Here would be the questions some of the problems I would have. Like, wait, okay, hold on. I just gave you 10 grand. 2,000 is going to military, which I know is important, but less than 500 is going to education. Not loving that ratio at all. Yeah. Another 2,000 is going to Medicare to insure people over 65, while I can't afford insurance for myself. You know what we're going to do? Let's do this. Yeah, let's give me the money back. I'm going to invest it in firearms and ammunition for me and a couple friends. You're going to figure out how to run this country off of import, property, and sales taxes. And if that doesn't work, you can come over and try and take it back. How's that sound? Let's go back to our roots.
There you have it on an FEF Friday. F for funny, comedian of the week, Dan Cummins. Barry, give us the backstory.
Dan's a funny dude. The reason why we did it is I was talking to Aaron. He was supposed to be here in Houston at the Secret Group. So not a Houston guy per se, but wanted to. It was an opportunity to shout out a local business in the Secret Group that hasn't had an opportunity to be open for business and do comedy and karaoke and bands and everything else that the Secret Group does so well down there in East downtown. So wanted to show a little love to the Secret Group here in Houston as a comedy venue. But yeah, Dan Cummins was supposed to be here. He's got a couple podcasts out, Time Suck and Scared to Death. Time Suck's very popular. Scared to Death does really well as well. He was the first. This is kind of crazy. I didn't realize this. First comic chosen to be spotlighted by Pandora. That's a pretty big deal when you think about all the comics that have audio recordings. And then, of course, he's done all the TV stuff, Conan, Gotham. He was New Faces Just for Laughs. So funny dude was going to be here, could not be. So why not showcase him and the Secret Group at the same time?
There you go. So we have one clip in the book. We'll have two more as we go, 215, 315. So keep that in mind as we continue to roll on an FEF Friday. And obviously, F is for full of draft stuff. As we got done with round one, and there's so much to get to, and we'll get to all the kind of non-X's and O football moves because there were some bizarre and crazy things that happened too, including one that no one really was talking about. But in Denver, much to John Elway's chagrin, since he had said everything went smoothly in the dry run and everything, Vic Fangio had an internet outage at one point and just scared the hell out of him, but he was able to get it back up and running. But for the most part, we'll get to all that. But before the break, we were talking about Dolphins after talking about Packers and getting into Texans. You don't think, and you said the numbers will back it up, but you don't think the Dolphins had a good first round?
I think they could have had a better first round. I think that, like, for example, when they moved back, if you look at who they took at corner at 30 and then who they passed on, just based off of grades and ratings and whatnot, there were, three corners rated higher than the kid from Auburn that they took, whose last name I cannot pronounce. But they could have had Gladney from TCU,
for example. At it.
Go ahead.
No, you take a shot at it.
Oh, I thought you said, I'll take a shot at it. I was waiting on that.
I watched the whole first round. I'll get it. I just need to look it up again.
But, I mean, you had – Trevon Diggs is still out there, and we're gonna get to that because I pray to the football gods that he's available when the Texans are picking at 40 because I would love for them to get that kid and get
Alabama
better.
Product too, which is you could do worse.
Yeah, so if you could still grab him, but that's somebody that I think Miami could have got. I mean, Gladney was available, whom the Vikings picked next. He was the third highest rated cornerback there. I felt like, you know, you've got the best running back in the draft still available. The third best running back in the draft, according to some people, maybe the second, was taken at the end of the first round. So not that big of a deal, but still, if you want the best available, you got to get him. And I don't know when their second round pick is, but I just thought, if you look at value, okay, now if you want to look at grades and how guys, you know, graded out versus where they were taken, which is what I did because, you know, I'm a numbers guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using, again, NFL.com's grades. The kid from Auburn at corner that they took at 30 graded out.
There you go. Noah Igbinoghene.
You start Igbinoghene. Yes.
Okay. Igbinoghene. Not bad. They said that he was the 66th highest rated player in the draft, just across the board. If you were just going best player, who was Chase Young, all the way down, and he sat at 66. Now, you draft based on need, obviously. But the difference in where they took him versus where he graded out overall was a negative minus or was a negative 33. In other words, they took the 66th best player in the draft at slot number 30. There was better value on the board, specifically, like I said, with the kid from TCU and Gladney. So
Del,
I thought that
you're
was
a resident
was bad.
Dolphin expert. Del, give us your thoughts.
I would to counter it. If I was, I'm just going by people who like the pick. He is a slot corner. I'm not sure Jeff Gladney or maybe some of the other guys you mentioned fill that need. The Dolphins have two really good corners on the outside, and Xavier Howard and Byron Jones, who they're paying a lot of money to. So the surprise in itself was they actually took a corner. But the Dolphins love to have six DBs. That comes from the Patriots model of where Brian Flores came from. They like 60 DBs on the field quite a bit. They have Bobby McCain, who will play slot for them, but he's really they've moved him to safety. Eric Rowe, former Patriots, to safety too. So if you're looking at it from a Dolphins perspective and trying to put him in the best positive light, they like this guy because they believe, at least, he was the best slot corner available. They'll throw him out there because nickel, you're probably in that 70-75% of the time now with how the NFL is. They believe they like to play a lot of man. They believe he was the best man nickel corner available, so that's why they took him there as opposed to maybe one of the other corners who's maybe a boundary or a field corner.
And the other thing, Barry, you got to keep in mind is going back to what I said in the first segment, which is teams get enamored with just certain players. And so I go to the Giants and Gettleman at four. They took Andrew Thomas, the offensive lineman for Georgia, who was probably the third or fourth highest rated offensive tackle in the draft. But somehow, some way, something that he had, Gettleman liked. So he went his way with it. And I think to Dell's point about the Dolphins, they now have three great man-to-man coverage corners that they love to use in their schemes. So I hear what you're saying, but it's the same way the receiver from TCU somehow sneaks into the first round above guys that were rated a lot higher than them too. So you can't sometimes predict the craziness of a certain general manager's thought process.
Yeah, I think the my only counter to Dell's argument, which is a good one, and I would expect that, but at 5'10", that kid from TCU, Gladney, I think a lot of people think he'll end up being a slot corner because of his size. So it if you could have had him as opposed to letting the Vikings grab him a pick later and the value from what he graded out versus the others, that's part of the reason. And then I'm with you, Dale. I think part of the problem is they went corner, and I don't think they really needed to. I think they had other needs they needed to address on that defense. Now, it goes back to your point you made when we were off air about running back. Are some of those guys, can they still get value at those pick at those positions later as opposed to what they did? If they would have gotten the kid from TCU as opposed to who they drafted, that argument makes more sense, but you didn't even get the best available corner in some people's eyes when you drafted it. So maybe you didn't need the position and you didn't get the best available. That would be my counter argument to it. But, I mean, I don't think they had a terrible draft. I think they could have just done it a lot better. And just statistically, when you look at value, they didn't have a good draft based on value because the Austin Jackson pick wasn't a great value pick either.
To your point about where they're picking 39th right before the Texans. So that's what – is that seven picks in or so in the draft?
Yeah.
So, so if they want a running back, I imagine they could get one, and they have so many picks they can move up a couple spots if they want to give up a fourth or a fifth, whatever it takes to make sure they don't get jumped.
Detroit needs a running back, and you might see them actually take one.
Yeah, so I think there are five that could possibly go if Mel Kiper said six. So if they want one, likely be able to get one at that spot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The other one was the tackle pick with Austin Jackson. Did you like that pick, though?
I mean, I don't know how to grade offensive linemen, so all I would be doing is be going by what people say. And what you said as far as where he would have been picked, and then there are others who said they love his ability as far as he's maybe the most athletic guy available. Strength-wise, he has some issues, and you might point to the fact that he had to donated bone marrow to his sister, so that might certainly sap your strength. And so he's only 20 years old, which which you could say about the corner as well. I mean, Tua's the only one who's of drinking age. The other two are 20 years old, so they did go with youth and potential. Mm-hmm. As far as the corner, he only played 2 years of corner. He was a wide receiver who entered Auburn. So the Dolphins, particularly in their later picks, drafted on potential. I can't tell you much about Austin Jackson other than what Lance said. He's athletic, has some technique issues, but it's a guy who can really get move in space.
You know what the move reminded me of? Because I'm with you. I don't know a ton about these guys, but I do know I look at the grades and then I read what experts like Lance Zierlein say, and it kind of reminded me of the Texans' pick of Titus Howard. It was a guy that he had some issues. It seemed like a bit of a reach because in the grading system, he's rated like seventh or eighth, and you had a Josh Jones from Houston available who graded out slightly better than him that may have been a better pick and maybe had a little bit better technique but has other issues possibly. But it just seemed like those guys I felt like might have been available with your next pick. So I think you have to look at what's going to be taken between their last pick and their next pick, and could you have gotten better at a position of need? Because there are teams like I said, Detroit with a running back. If Detroit gets a better running back than the Dolphins, then maybe they did mess that pick up if they still could have gotten a corner or a tackle later. So that's all. I just felt like Miami had it was going to be hard for them to not have a good draft. I just felt like from a value perspective, they maybe could have gotten a little better value just based on grades and stuff. Obviously not based on specific slot, corner needs or whatever.
Fair enough. I mean, look, the other thing that you got to keep in mind is with all the things that they did with their defensive backs, there's one that they don't need anymore that they didn't need to feel the need to bring back. And so the Texans felt the need to bring him in. We'll have that news for you as we continue to roll on with our number one of the show, as the Texans have made another move. And no, it's not going to knock you off your feet and be the blockbuster you're waiting for, but we'll give it to you next as we get into what could be the first pick for the Texans coming tonight. And more right here on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Now here we go, rolling through more of the first hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It is Dell along with Barry and myself, Joel, as we take you till 4. Dell in the first hour, and then I believe Aaron Raybould again takes us the final two. Dell, always good to have you along, and especially when we got Dolphins topics on the table. And another one comes up because now between rounds 1 and 2, Bill O'Brien has made another move as he signed safety Michael Thomas, most recently of the Dolphins, previously of the Giants. But in talking to you during the break, not a guy that everybody should be looking for big things from. A good guy, which means he should be a Texan. But overall, give us your background on what you know of the guy.
He was a core special teamer for quite a while. In the new regime with the Brian Flores one, actually, he was most recently of the Giants. He played it for them in 18 and 19. So he's with the Dolphins, okay. I think, last in 17. He was a guy who probably most famously picked off Tom Brady when he was – like he was filling in for a couple injured safeties in maybe the final game of the year. He picked off Tom Brady to seal a victory for the Dolphins. That might be his claim to fame in the end zone as a Patriots are driving. But if you like, he's a special teamer. He developed into a guy you could depend on as, I don't know, maybe your third or fourth safety. But he's not a guy you want starting. He's apparently a quality person, good in the locker room, which we know apparently the Texans really value. But other than that,
he's from Aldine, so he's coming home, so this could be a big deal.
He's mostly safety depth at this point. That's what he is. And he's a special teams captain, so you might expect him to be all over the field with special teams.
Yay, Texans. Okay.
Yeah, well, we know this is a team that has struggled in not the last couple years. I think last year they rated pretty highly in special teams. I'd have to go look, but I felt like they have been a much improved team versus the first 3 or 4 years that Bill O'Brien was here. as a special teams unit. So I think that they put an emphasis on that. They've gotten better. And I think, you know, like Dale said, this dude's known as a special teams guy. Mm-hmm. He's a Steve Tasker type player, if you will. He'll be good depth at safety, but he probably won't start.
The numbers weren't released, but when we find out he's a top six special teams paid player in the league, it'll all make more sense.
Yeah, well, he'll be a top six paid safety, the number one paid special teams player.
Right.
That's the Bill O'Brien thing. By the way, speaking of the Texans, I was perusing my Twitter this morning, just laying in bed drinking coffee and on my phone, and happened to notice that back-to-back tweets on my timeline last night, because I was kind of busy doing other stuff, Cody Stoops tweets about, oh, hey, thanks Texans PR for sending
Thank
me
you.
Pizza.
I was just going to the exact same thing.
I see Matt Thomas, hey, thanks Texans PR for the pizza. So I screenshotted it, tagged Texans PR and said, hey, where's my pizza? I wonder why I didn't get one. That's strange.
Wait a minute. So then Dell Granato was all over it again this morning, too. Lance Zierlein didn't get one, but Jason Braddock did, along with all the people that you mentioned. And Granato, obviously, I get a little bit more. But I'm like, well, Barry didn't get one. I didn't get one. I wonder who else didn't get one.
So Granato did or did not?
Did.
Okay. So somebody at our station got a pizza. That's all I was wondering. How much do they hate us that no one at this station got a pizza?
AJ had Zierlein to get a pizza, right?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Fred,
they hate Fred too, I think. I think Bill O'Brien hates Fred. I think the Texans hate AJ. They obviously hate us.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe Charlie got a pizza.
I would think Palillo, Granato, and Lance for sure. I mean, how does Lance not get a pizza? And Tiff Streets. Cookies too. So that's just ridiculous to me. And I was going to bring it up before you did, right? Exactly. Yeah. There too. Like just another typical Texans move.
Yep.
And they're trying to kiss ass on the media. Like cookies and pizza are going to keep them from bashing Bill O'Brien.
Shout out to the Texans, baby. First class all the way. Let's selectively send pizza to a few media guys. Well, you know what? Even your pizza wouldn't have bought back my fandom as a fan. Y'all can suck it. As a radio guy, now y'all can suck it. So, whatever.
As a guy that wants credentials, you can suck it.
I don't want credentials to the Texans. Are you kidding me? I might as well watch the game from a freaking helicopter. I don't care about Texans credentials. Honest to God, I don't. I don't need Texans credentials, especially to go watch Bill O'Brien mess up the whole thing when he's out there coaching. I don't need to see that. I can get mad and angry and watch terrible coaching from my living room couch. I don't need that.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up to you. Dell, I'm surprised you didn't get pizza.
I'm not. Not at all. <Just
saying. laughs> Dale the realist.
You are you're entrenched right between Lance and Granato, though, so I would think that they would want to take care of the entire bench. I don't know what their thought process is over there, but nice try, but swing and a miss.
Yeah. All right, real quick, I just wanted to get these out of the way. Who was your – what do you think the steal of the draft was for you?
I mean, people are going to laugh at me for saying this. I think the Cowboys getting CeeDee Lamb where they did. I think the fact that there were a lot of different needs the Cowboys had, but when you have an impact player like that fall into your lap, I think that Jerry Jones, for all the times he can be criticized, I think he did the right thing. You capitalize on getting a guy that can desperately – he can change a game, and I think
I think that's a great pick. I think that's an excellent pick. I think there were four guys that got that where there was great value, and that was certainly one of them. That was me. I was like, wow, the fact that they were able to get him at 17 when he was considered by a lot to be a top 10 pick. Period. If you get a top 10 pick at 17. You're doing pretty darn good, which is why I think Baltimore, if I'm not going to go CeeDee Lamb, I think Baltimore getting Patrick Queen at 28. That's a pretty
good. Who, by the way,
pick
Lamar
too.
Jackson called Ray Lewis Jr.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go that far, but yeah.
Well, okay. But that's what I think the thought process is. You have an opportunity to get a franchise level linebacker who probably could have been a top 15 pick, and you can get him at 28. So I see why they jumped on that, because that's Baltimore's thing. If you think about it, you look at the Raiders, who I think had maybe the worst pick in the first round. But you look at the Raiders going speed at receiver. That's typical Raiders, right? Yeah. You look at Baltimore going linebacker, maybe of the future. That's typical Baltimore. So it kind of makes sense.
And but am I not wrong that really if you're going to call someone Ray Lewis, you're going to be a guy that is strong in physical stature and the way he plays the game? I just don't see that.
Well, I mean, if you play linebacker in the SEC, you're certainly not you're certainly not soft by most accounts, especially if you're considered one of the better linebackers in the SEC. You're not going to be. I mean, dude, he's not huge. He's not huge, but I certainly think he could be that type of franchise level linebacker. Maybe not physically as imposing or as intimidating as Ray Lewis, but could he be, the best linebacker in that division? I think he could. He has the potential to be, at least.
Okay.
So I mean, I thought that was
Queen
really good
is a sideline to sideline speed guy. I mean, a guy that covers a lot of ground. I think I compare him a lot to a guy like Kenneth Murray, who the Chargers traded up to get. I don't see those guys as being like big hitting, run stopping linebackers. I see those guys as being hyper athletic coverage guys that can get all over the field, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, he graded out at number 12 overall. He was the 12th highest graded player in the draft.
Okay.
And they ended up getting him at 28. So, not too terrible. Not too terrible from a value perspective. But that same thing, CeeDee Lamb graded out at number 7, and Cowboys get him at 17. So, again, that's value. I really like the Derrick Brown pick by Carolina. That's another guy that –
boy, a lot of people hammering that pick. I thought it was a good pick, too, and I thought him sliding a little bit. And people are saying, no, top 10 picks you don't waste on defensive tackles, and that's not a position of need and all this other stuff. I thought – and what a classy kid, too. I think in so many ways, especially trying to get off with a fresh start in Carolina, I thought that was a good pick.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that, and to be able to, it wasn't the greatest value in the first round, but to be able to get a kid who a lot of people thought was maybe top 3, top 5, and legitimately he grades out on this NFL.com as the third best prospect in the NFL draft. They had Young, Okuda, and then Brown. His grade was a 7.11. The only two higher were the two kids from Ohio State. So it's pretty good value if you can get that, around 7 to 10 range. And I think what was your worst pick in the draft? If I guessed, it would be Green Bay. Was that your –
Well, no, I think a lot of people thought that I was going to be more critical than I was. But I think kind of on the theme that we've been going with in terms of when guys are enamored, I think Andrew Thomas at 4 – I don't think he was the highest rated offensive tackle on the board. I don't think that, and if the Giants wanted to do that, I think they actually could have probably traded back and still gotten the guy they wanted. And so to have a pick that high and then take a guy that in a lot of guys' draft boards was like the second, third, fourth highest rated offensive tackle, I questioned that.
Yeah, that's a good – I think, though, Oakland – And the Damon Arnett pick, I just don't get that.
You mean Las Vegas, Barry?
See,
my bad.
Joel, you started with Michael Thomas news. Well, Ian Rappaport's reporting big news for the Texans regarding a left tackle. So we can have that on the other side.
Does that mean that they've overpaid yet again? We'll find out. Look at that. Dealt with some breaking news as we continue to roll with hour number one. Don't go anywhere. Much more to come, starting with that. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
You good, T-Minus? You didn't count me out. I'm counting my bullets. I'm loading my clips. I'm writing down names. I'm making a list. I'm checking.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back, wrapping up hour number one of the three-hour show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Bill O'Brien has done it again. As Dell alluded to before the break, fellas, Ian Rappaport and others reporting the Texans have finalized a 3-year contract extension for Laremy Tunsil. On the surface, if I just told you that, you locked up your franchise left tackle, the guy that you gave up a lot of draft picks for, so you avoided all that. But much like we said when we said because Bill O'Brien wasn't savvy enough to get an extension signed as part of the deal, he made a haul, and when he turned down the first Texans offer, which still would have made him the highest paid offensive tackle at 18, he was a smart man. He got more than, Barry, you and I thought he was going to get. He got more than 20. He got an extension worth $22 million per year, including $50 million in guarantees. $40 million due at the signing. Oh, my goodness.
God, are you serious?
Bro, $22 million per year, right? $57 million guaranteed. $40 million due at signing. $13 million signing bonus.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Deshaun Watson's got to go be calling his agent going, bro, I know I can play elsewhere, but if we can make this much of a bank robbery without getting arrested, we need to just go cash
Dude,
in.
Deshaun Watson called his agent and said, okay, here's the plan. So what I need you to do is get me traded. All right? Now, hear me out. Get me traded and then get me – in the last year of my deal, get me traded back here – so that I can hold them ransom like Tunsil did and make a grip. Because with wow.
And you want something else? The chef's kiss to all this?
Nope.
Tunsil negotiated the deal himself. He doesn't have an agent. So he's not – there are no agent fees for Tunsil.
Yes.
All this goes to him.
Wow. He did all that himself?
Without a gas mask.
Oh, my God. So I'm on SpotTrack, which is my go-to resource for cap stuff, whether it's NBA, you know, MLB, NFL. They've got his market value at $18.2 million. That was his market value. We said, you got held over a barrel. You're probably going to have to pay the dude $20. He goes out, Dell, and you're telling me he negotiates $22?
Yep.
What's Bill O'Brien going to say? Hey, pay me or I'll leave, and you're out two first-rounders and a second.
What we said all along. Look, he's dangling a blank check. But we thought there was an agent involved and that there was going to be money lost to that. I mean, fools we are, and shame on us, because not only did he still dangle the blank check, but he did it himself and got more money.
Here's your top paid tackles in the NFL. And I'm going to go because Tunsil was sitting at number 10 at $10.3 million. At number 9, Bakhtiari at 10.5, Staley at 10.5, Riley Reiff at 10.9, Humphreys of the Cardinals at 11.5, Trent Williams was making 12.5, Ronnie Stanley was making 12.8, Russell Okung was making 13, Donovan Smith in Tampa is making 14.5. Top pay tackle was Taylor Lewan out in Tennessee making 16.
Yeah, I was going to say, look at the canyon between Laremy Tunsil and the former number one.
All those tackles I just read you could have Joe Staley and DJ Humphreys, who would be 8-6 on this list for less than they're going to pay Laremy Tunsil. You could have two top tackles in the NFL pay-wise.
Tunsil's going to bring his false starts with him, too. So that's going to be something to look forward to. That's something that a lot of guys in this league don't have.
Now, look, I'm not talking about – I'm just talking payroll-wise as far as starting left tackles – of quality in the NFL, Joe Staley and David Bakhtiari combined are making $21 million.
I mean, and I'm not trying to do this because he's a Packer, but Bakhtiari's contract's coming up. He's going to get paid. He's got to love what he just saw out of Tunsil, because when you start looking at SpotTrack and everything else, Bakhtiari is up there in the top two in terms of performance, and he's going, hey, back that Brinks truck in Green Bay, too, or somewhere else, because he's going to get paid. Because I'm not going to say far better, but he's better than Laremy Tunsil. And there are several guys on your list that are.
Yeah. The only saving grace about Laremy Tunsil is that he's 25 years old. So he's still young because Bakhtiari's 28. But tackles, dude, tackles will play into their late
30s. Yeah, unless it depends on how many knee surgeries they have.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, too. Bill O'Brien just said, hold my beer. Because like I told you, he always likes to prove the media and the fans wrong, or, you know, he takes it personally. Well, he took it personally when everybody said, well, you're overpaying for guys in the top six in their position. So then he paid a kicker to be in the top three. Then they said, well, you paid a kicker in the top three that wasn't worthy of it. So he goes, hold my beer. I'm going to pay this tackle more than anybody in the league by $8 million. Love that.
That's awful, man.
But you know what? Yeah. Jack Easterby prayed on it, so I'm sure it's the right move.
What is that? What do you mean he prayed
Jack
on
Easterby,
it?
Jack Easterby, he went from being the team chaplain in certain previous jobs to now being a freaking football aficionado and expert. Every move that's made over on Kirby, it becomes more of a head-scratcher until you start gouging out your eyes and your hair and everything on your head.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Man. Oh, so your big Texans news is they got better on special teams and overpaid their star left tackle who had them by the short and curlies. Unbelievable.
Just ridiculous. Well, now everybody, start the draft. Hey, round two is tonight. Start picking out your new favorite team that you're going to start following, because more and more people need to jump on board with another squad than sticking with this one, because no matter how much your loyalties are to them, they have no loyalties to you. They have no idea what they're doing with cap space and or money. They throw away all their draft picks, and they know that no matter what they throw away, you ain't going anywhere. So until you do something, it's not going to change.
Joel, you're not going to get a pizza this way.
I don't care. I do not care. And obviously you know that.
No. That's unbelievable, by the way. The Bakhtiari – or the Taylor Lewan deal when he signed it. So I didn't – what did you say the particulars were again?
We're talking about – oh, for Tunsil?
Yeah.
Okay, Tunsil – 3 years, $66 million, $50 guaranteed, $40 due at signing, including a $13 million signing bonus.
So here was the particulars from when Taylor Lewan signed his five-year deal. It was 5 years, $80 million, $11 million signing bonus, $50 million guaranteed, and an average annual salary of $16. So... 34 mil guaranteed at signing. Yeah.
Wow. The hits just keep on coming, and like I said, and you guys just keep on taking it. So.
And that was 2018. That was not. I mean, I think he signed that deal in 2018. So we're not talking about a crazy long.
No,
time
right. Before. And he just set a new scale and a new day for all left tackles in this league, because they're all licking their chops going, God, I hope my contract expires quickly, because there's not going to be a whole lot. There's a lot of teams and general managers that are pissed off right now at Bill O'Brien going, again, another position in which you've overpaid, which is going to put more stress on me. What are you doing, Bill O'Brien?
Golly.
Just a flipping joke. All right, so that's the way we're going to wrap up hour number one, as we tell Dell to have a great weekend, because his day is done, and we'll continue to roll on as one in the books, two to go, still 2 hours of the show, and lots more to get to. And obviously with this news, I can tell that there's going to be discussion galore about that. And also keep in mind, we're going to have Mike Greenberg of Get Up, and formerly of Mike and Mike, and a longstanding ESPN personality, join us along the way. So that should be good as well, as we get into some things with Greeny for his illustrious career in sports broadcasting. And we also want you to be a part of the show. So 713-780-3776. It's our HRNP listener line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. Back with the second hour. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5. But we don't know for real. Next time, guarantee the truth will get revealed. Black leather glove, no sequins. Yeah, buckles on the jacket, it's elite.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.